Well, there you go. The Wrong Side of Heaven, The Right Side of Hell. Relatively new song out there. Some of the band is, I think, Five-Fingered Fist or something like that. Anyhow, it goes on for a little longer there, but we cut it off. But anyhow, it's a good anti-war song, that's for sure. Terrible Tommy here. It's Saturday. Wait a minute here. I think I still got some music on here. Hold it. Well, I don't know how that was creeping in there, but it did. That's happened to me before, too. Hey, the date is the 16th of August, 2014. Saturn's Day. Yeah, Saturn's Day. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your shekels, but convert them to dollar bills first, please. Your donation for the show. Then go on up to resist.com and look around. Now, look, I got a couple of donations here for a couple of donation books somebody sent me. It looked like a good book. I haven't read it yet myself, but it's a big old thick book. It's about the Finnish-Russian wars. So it's about 285 pages, called Frozen Hell, The Russo-Finnish War of 1939 and 40. Helsinki, 10:30 a.m., November 30th, 1939. Soviet bombers dropped from a cloud bank to unload their bombs on the capital city of Finland. In the weeks to come, the world would watch admiringly as the tiny army of small Baltic Republic wages the kind of war that inspires legends against the invading military might of the Soviet Union. A forgotten war until now. The author is William R. Trotter, T-R-O-T-T-E-R. I've got two of these, and they're available. So if you'd like to send me a donation or bid on them or whatever, well, I'll see that you get one. So just remember, they're here. Those two books have a $15.95, in other words, $16 shelf price from the publisher. So give me your ID on a donation for one of them, and I'll get it to you. And the highest bid gets it, or gets both of them. Well, today I'm going to reach into my grab bag from Sling Blade. From, I don't know when he made these. I've got a whole box of them here. And he may tell the date when on the show. But here is a show from Sling Blade from who knows when. Okay.
Be without Tom Metzger. You can reach Tom at tm_Metzger@yahoo.com. You can call the Aryan Update Line at 574-267-5036. And send your correspondence to P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581.
Don't forget, that phone number is no good, that 5036 number. The only good, the good number now is 559-670-1473. Yeah.
And for my comrades in the Chicago metropolitan area, if you want to scrawl on the walls of bathroom stall, I hope you guys are reaching out to Tom Metzger with funds to help him keep the radio show going, so he can do some other things, some other information, whether it be video or audio to us. I know the one that he did on the update line about the fertility rates in Europe was just mind-boggling. It just, and I did a show, and I actually, Tom sent me a recording of that, and I actually used it in one of the openings of, I think, the first Radio Rahoa show. So you might hear that first, or you might not have heard that yet. So we're a low-budget operation. We don't have a big staff to help us sort through shows and put them in order and stuff. So if you heard it, great. If you haven't, well, you'll probably hear it in the future. once again, want to start off with a passage from Which Way Western Man from William Gailey Simpson. This book can be purchased through the National Alliance, by the way. A friend of mine got it for me, actually from Amazon, I think. Got it over the internet. Brand new, too. So I tell you what, there's got to be a way we can find a way to preserve our literature, really. But this book is like one of those books where if you can get past the first couple of chapters, which is pretty philosophical, it really talks about the inward self of man and how to conquer that and how it changed his life. I'm in the chapter now dealing with aristocracy, and it's very, very interesting. In the chapter before, they talked about the fallacies of popular government. I'll tell you, this book is a great read. It's 1,070 pages. I'm only on page 300, so, man, I hope to have this done by springtime. Springtime, I start a new job. I'm going to be a trucker. I'm going to travel all over the United States. That's right. All right. This is from William Gailey Simpson. I believe it's in the chapter about Jesus. This guy started out, like, in the 1920s. He was just a rabid Christian, you know, doing what he could for the underprivileged, you know. I forgot the name of the town in New Jersey. It's spelled P-A-S-S-I-A-K. I don't know how to pronounce that. Is it Passaic or Passaic or something like that? I don't know. That town's a bad town in New Jersey now. It's nothing but mud. But when he was doing outreach work in that town in New Jersey, even in the 20s, there were some muds, but there were a lot of Eastern Europeans. But I know for a fact that those Eastern Europeans are gone in that town now. So it's all black and brown now. It's black and Puerto Rican, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, he went through this stage where just he tried to be the best Christian he could possibly be, but he just... After much meditation and contemplation, he realized that not only is it impossible, but it's destructive to the Aryan soul. So let's read this passage here. First, we must become conscious that we as a people have a soul, and that it can be lost, that in fact, it is now in terrible danger of being lost forever. But if and when we do become conscious of our soul at last, and behold what it contains of strength and beauty, and stand before it in mingled reverence and pride, our great ones shall mark out the path that belongs to us and shape the disciplinary measures necessary to ensure that our feet shall follow it. And out of this will come our own, our Aryan Nordic Bible. What else should I call it? That will hold up before us our own ideals and traditions, the record of our supreme achievements and triumphs, the story of our saints and heroes, the admonitions of our great wise men and guides, and the vision of our own hopes and dreams and purposes pushed deep into the distant future. It will be the book of life, not of the poor or the weak or the meek, but of the strong and masterful, who by their mastery over themselves will shape their life into something ever more beautiful. Let me stop right there for a second. What are you doing out there, comrades, to master yourself? Do you think you've arrived because you know the truth about the Jews and equality and the lies of democracy and even Christianity? Do you think you've arrived? We should never stop learning. You know, even though I've said before that we don't need to read no more books no more, you know what the problem is, the Jews and blacks. But I just had this thirst inside me that I just needed to read more. Even though I felt like I know what the problem is. I know it's the Jews. I know it's sellout whites. I know it's detrimental to our race to be living in a land not our own, sharing a land with our racial enemies, with races that we have no business being on the same soil with, and that there's no white homeland anywhere on this planet. I know all that, but I still have this inner quest to read great white literature. Now, it still stands, as I said before. You want to read stuff like this, great. But supplement that reading with tactical reading, with Army field manuals, with books about police tactics and forensics and police training manuals and DVDs and videos and stuff like that. So what have you done to master yourself? Are you a heavy drinker? You know what? Don't lie to yourself. Do you drink a six-pack every day? You have a drinking problem. Don't tell me you're on drugs. You smoke a little reefer here and there? You have a poor diet? You may be broad in the shoulders and have a big chest and big arms. Is your stomach big? If you're in a fight for your life against a bunch of reds, blacks, Hispanics, racial enemies, you're going to regret having that 40 pounds of blubber on your belly. All right, continuing on. Who by their master will shape, who by their master over themselves will shape their life into something ever more beautiful in soul and in body until at last they deserve again that name with which they began the proud head-lifting name of Aryan, the Noble Ones. It will be their book of gratitude to life, their book of rejoicing, their cradle song and their battle songs, and the mirror of their soul soaring over vast abysses and with eagle eyes studying far horizons. It will be the supremely yea-saying book of a people resolved at all costs to live on the heights and to be itself, and that will rather perish than give place to any other or serve his will. Well, we're definitely serving an alien master. Oh, I ain't serving no alien master. What are you talking about? You pay taxes, right? You're a law-abiding citizen, right? Even though the lawmakers are Jews themselves and puppets of Jews. I'm a slave. I know I am. I'm mentally emancipated. And maybe financially, too, because I'm unemployed, so I'm not paying any taxes or anything, but still, most of my racial kinsmen are. We're slaves. And many of us who listen to these shows have been mentally emancipated. We're not physically emancipated. And it's not enough to be just mentally set free. And there's no limit to the freedom in the mental sphere. There's no limit to your freedom on a cognitive level. Some of us who listen to shows still have chains on their brains. There's still chains in their minds. There's things that they will absolutely won't do. I'm not talking about racial treason. I'm talking about going above and beyond for the service of your race. Many of us still have chains on our brains. We just can't get the gumption to go do the bold acts of resistance. Well, I want to read something here. Once again, it's from the Paranoid newsletter. This is anonymously and instantly moving money via reloadable debit cards. How the high-tech teenagers and computer nerds move money instantly. Reloadable debit cards are debit cards that can have funds applied to them at future dates. You need an identity to get the actual plastic card activated. You should also have a safe mailbox to get the card mailed to. Pretty much, you go into a store that sells the reloadable debit cards with a bunch of cash in hand. You give the clerk the money, and they give you a temporary card. The temporary card can't be used for much. It is just a number on a card. It is just a number on cardboard, not actual plastic. You will need to call and give an information that's social security number, address, etc. to activate the card, and then the actual plastic card is mailed to you. To activate the card, you should clearly not use an info that has ties to you. You also should not use a phone that has ties to you. Disposable prepaid cell phones are good for this. Also, you should have the card sent to a box registered with a fake ID or an abandoned house or such thing. That, now, that is a cool trick. I never even thought of that. An abandoned house. You could do a surreptitious entry in an abandoned house and put curtains up. Make it look like no one's home. You know, you don't want no one peeking in there. Does anyone even live here? You know? And they look in the living room, there's no furniture there. They're going to think it was a mistake. So, that's interesting. Using an abandoned house as a mail drop. Or, you know, through the actual postal service. That's kind of cool. Naturally, there should be nothing to connect you to the debit card. Or to the debt card. Debit. Yeah, I think it meant debit card. Although you need a secure place to receive the plastic card, it is very easy for people to send you money. They merely need to go into a store that sells reload packs and hand the clerk some cash for one. The clerk loads the cash onto the reload card. Now, they can take the number off the reload card and send it to the person with the plastic card. The reload number should be sent encrypted in all cases. In the event law enforcement is monitoring your communication, you do not want to get a person's card flagged, nor do you want to draw attention to yourself. I suggest people refuse reload card information that is sent to them without encryption. The person with the plastic card can now take the number of the reload card and can use it to apply funds to their plastic card online. This should be done behind anonymous proxies in all circumstances. Green Dot reloadable cards are only sold in the United States, but different countries are likely to have different reloadable cards. Parts of Europe, including Russia, and I believe Germany, have web money cards, which are like a mixture between reloadable debit cards and e-currency. When cashing out money from a reloadable debit card at an ATM, a great deal of care can be taken. Gloves should be worn, as should hats and long-sleeve clothing. You know, if it's a hot, sunny day, another technique to use instead of gloves would be putting clear fingernail polish on your fingertips and on your palms, or whatever's going to touch the buttons. Little trick I learned in Andrew McDonald's Hunter, Andrew McDonald being a pseudonym for William Pierce. Okay, gloves should be worn, and should hats and long-sleeve clothing. The plastic card should be free of fingerprints. Some ATM machines can grab cards, which could later be forensically analyzed. Interesting! I didn't know that. You should park at least a block away from the ATM you use. A better bet would be to use a taxi and be dropped off a block away from the ATM you plan to use. Why do you think the taxi's dropping off a block away? So the taxi cannot be a witness and say, yeah, I dropped the guy off at that ATM. You have the guy drop him off a block away so it's not fresh in that taxi cab guy's mind where he dropped you off at. He can't say that guy went to the ATM. He can't say he dropped him off in the area. So maybe two blocks away. But whoever wrote this, this is a very tactical, not only a technical mind, but a tactical mind. Okay, you should block up, park away. All right. Be dropped off at a block away from the ATM you plan to use. Okay. All ATM machines have hidden surveillance cameras installed. All ATM machines have hidden surveillance cameras. They are creative payment schemes. There are creative payment schemes that can be created. God damn it. There are creative payment schemes that can be created. This will make sense. There are creative payment schemes can be created reloadable debit cards. There's a word missing there somehow. I think it's that. Let me read it word for word here. Pay attention. There are creative payment schemes can be created reloadable debit cards. Something's missing there. Try to make sense of that. All right. New sentence. Someone trusted with access to lots of identities and boxes can get cards in bulk and resell them once they are activated. People buying pre-activated reloadable debit cards do not need safe boxes or access to identities. They just need a magstrip encoder and blank card stock. Here is the scenario. One person gets many activated reloadable debit cards. They use a skimmer to get dumps of the magstrip information. Skimmers, I'm not a technical guy. I'm reading this because I know those guys out there are technical. So I hope you guys understand what I'm talking about. When they say they use a skimmer to get dumps of the magstrip information, what does that mean, get dumps? What does it mean? That means get a lot of information? I'm not familiar with that terminology. Some of you guys out there are. And if you're not, if you're a dumbass like me, get familiar with it. So I'm hoping Lone Wolf Wall Street or Lone Wolf Computer Man hears this and maybe does a follow-up show. And maybe even does a rebuttal show to this. If he wants to correct me on things, that's fine. I'm not infallible. But definitely to straighten out this information. When they use terminology like this, I wish they'd give like a little explanation what they mean by that. That's all. Skimmers are usually used by people who commit credit card fraud. Essentially, they make a perfect digital copy of the information on a card's mag strip. The people can take this dump and encrypt it to a customer's encryption key, then encrypt the card dump. The person buying the activated reloadable debit card then decrypts the dump and uses a magstrip encoder to encode it to a blank card stock. The blank card is essentially the activated reloadable debit card now, as far as an ATM can tell. For this system to work, the person selling the activated card information must be trusted to not keep a copy of the card themselves. If they keep a copy of the card, they could steal money intended for you. If they are trusted and destroy their copy of the card after selling it, this can be a good market for people with access to identities and boxes, and a great way for people to buy anonymous ATM cards that are easy to fund for customers. Reloadable debit cards should be split up over regions. Time should be allowed to pass between funds being added and money taken off them as well. Remember, reloadable debit cards are not designed for money transfers. They are designed to be used as actual debit cards. If a customer providing the reloadable card sees it is being loaded by people over a wide area, the money is immediately cashed out at an ATM. They will likely freeze the card and the assets loaded to it. For this reason, I suggest you use specific reloadable cards to cover different regions of an area you work. You know, if you can have access like this, man, you can use this techniques to fund the revolution, you know? Buy supplies, buy resources, buy information. Get a lot of potentially good, I mean, if you're technically savvy and can do this, you can do a lot for the struggle. You can help out the struggle a lot. Do I condone this? Absolutely. Why should I condone obeying the laws when every single institution, practically every politician, and every part of our government has literally sold the white race out? Why should I give any kind of credence to any creed or law or code or any moral code when I know, when I can see with my very eyes that my race is being destroyed? Do I condone this activity? Absolutely. Where did I leave off? Also, if you only work regional, reloadable debit cards can be the perfect solution. You should not move more than around $1,000 a month through a single reloadable debit card, or you risk it being frozen. Okay, don't forget to remove the hidden info stored by digital cameras. Okay, all right. I guess I'm done with the money stuff. That's very, very interesting. Let me reread something here. If the company providing the reloadable debit card sees it as being loaded by people over a wide area and the money is immediately cashed out at an ATM, they will likely freeze the card and the assets loaded to it. For this reason, I suggest you use specific reloadable cards to cover different regions of the area you work. Also, if you only work regionally, reloadable debit cards can be the perfect solution. You should not move more than $1,000 a month through a single reloadable card. You should not move it around, maybe even from one card to another. I'm not sure what he means, but I'm sure you guys know. Through a single reloadable debit card, or you risk it being frozen. Very interesting. This guy is a stud. All right, here we go. Moving on to cameras now. Don't forget to remove the hidden info stored by digital cameras in a JPEG image. Don't forget to remove the hidden info stored by digital cameras in JPEG images. Okay. Modern digital cameras encode information about the camera in the JPEG, I guess it's called. JPEG. In the JPEG images they create. The first thing we will discuss here is the metadata. Metadata is quite literally data on data. There are various forms of metadata, and it can reveal a lot of information you are probably wanting to keep secret. Let's say you take a picture with the digital camera and then load it to your computer. If you use the JPEG format, a lot of information is going to be available in your picture. Such information will likely include some or all of the following: camera manufacturer, camera model, camera serial number, software used, time of photograph, flash status, did the flash go off when the picture was taken, or other technical information. Now, a lot of things can be done with this information. If you post a picture even from behind an anonymity network, it isn't going to be very anonymous if the picture has the serial number of your camera attached to it with metadata. Perhaps you registered the camera for a warranty, and it will not be trivial for law enforcement to find your true identity. Even if you did not register the camera, oftentimes the serial number can pinpoint the store you bought it from, and in some cases you will be on closed-circuit television surveillance cameras buying it. Even if the metadata does not contain your serial number, simply leaking the manufacturer and the model of the camera can be used as circumstantial evidence against you after you are raided and the camera is discovered. Software used can leak information about your operating system in many cases, which can be used against you in several different ways, including targeting specific exploits rather than guessing which OS you are using. I wonder what OS means. I hope someone out there knows. Okay. Time of the photograph can help a forensic timeline of activity be built and presented against you in court. Sometimes there will be a thumbnail of the photograph stored in metadata. And even if you edit the main photograph, the thumbnail will stay the same. So perhaps you have a photograph that reveals information on yourself in part of it, and edit that out. Without removing metadata, you could be at risk of a forensic scientist recovering the information you removed from the picture by analyzing the metadata thumbnail. In other words, a lot of evidence can be gathered on you from a simple digital photograph. Now, is he talking about a real thumbnail, like of your hand, or is that a terminology for something? Whoever knows the answer to all these questions, if you can help it, don't write in. Put it on a show somehow. That's why I hope either Lone Wolf DC or Lone Wolf Computer Man hears the show and it does a rebuttal show to it. And puts it in layman's terms. Talk to guys like me about it like we're 6 years old, you know. That'll help out a lot. Not that I plan on using, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't plan on using a digital camera for anything. Remember why? I'm low-tech Casper. You know, I don't hate technology. I love technology. Technology is great. I just don't want technology being traced to me. All right, there are a few ways you can remove metadata from photos. One way is to load the photo with metadata to your computer and then view it full size in a photo editing program. Now hit your print screen button on the keyboard, which is usually right after F12. This takes a screenshot of your desktop. Since the full size photograph was viewable on your desktop, it takes a screenshot of the photograph. You can now cut out the photograph from the full desktop screenshot and save it. The newly saved image will not have any metadata attached to it, and you can securely erase the old image. This trick should work for all formats of images. There are various programs that allow for the removal of metadata from photographs as well, which can come in handy if you want to sanitize a lot of your images and don't have time to take a print screen of each one. I don't know of any such programs off the top of my head, but you will find an abundance of them if you look. You should also know that the blur function of your image editing program is almost certainly inadequate. Forensics can unblur things pretty easily. The algorithm to blur pixels does not use cryptographically secure number generation, and as a result, forensic analysis can reverse engineer the blurring. You need to actually go over the identifying marks with a paintbrush or cut them out, at which point you should likely take a print screen of the edited image. Now cut the image out of the print screen and paste it as a new edited image. Okay. I hope you guys out there know what he's talking about. Microsoft Office documents such as spreadsheets, presentations, text documents, and PDFs are other sorts of files that can have damning metadata. Document metadata often includes the name of the account the document was made in, number of the company the computer that made the document is registered to, the name of your computer, the account names of people who previously worked on the document, document revisions, document versions, amount of time spent editing the document. As you can see, there is a variety of ways that Office file metadata can be used against you. If your computer or account is named after yourself, as many people do, then you could very well be publishing your real name when you publish your sensitive documents. Perhaps the location of your place of work can be determined. Chains of custody can be determined in some cases, meaning if you send a document to someone else who find the document and analyze the metadata can determine it came from you and also where you got it from or if it originated at you. There are a few things you can do to minimize the damage of Office file metadata. First of all, you shouldn't be using a computer or account named after you in the first place, and you shouldn't be using software that is registered to your name. Second of all, you shouldn't ever do sensitive things from a work computer that has ties to you. Although cafe computers can, in some cases, be okay if you are not directly linked to them. Third of all, after you finish creating an Office file and after you get one before forwarding it on, you should copy and paste the information to a new document and securely erase the original. This will remove some metadata, versions, revisions, time editing, previous authors, etc., but not all of it, computer name, account name, and company name, etc. I hope you guys aren't bored by this, because there are some technically savvy people in the radio club, or anyone who's listening to this. And if you're ARA and you're going to use this information to wreak havoc on society, go ahead. We don't give a flip. This ain't our society no more. The system has determined that we're the red-headed stepchild. We're the bastard children of America. We're strangers in our own land. and you help them. And I hope when the crapola hits the fan in this country, you all pay the piper. There are also software tools to remove metadata that you should make use of. The program you use will depend on what type of document you are cleaning. Microsoft has a free metadata remover for Microsoft Office documents. I imagine it is probably fairly trustworthy, simply because they intend it to be used by lawyers and such to remove metadata that could leak confidential information. You should be able to find a free program to remove metadata from whatever sort of Office document you are using. Just use a search engine. One more specific note on PDFs that certain people might find helpful. Simply covering words with black boxes usually won't actually erase them. You can highlight them with the mouse even if they are under the blacked out bits, and then paste them into a Word document or some such thing. This exploit was used against a U.S. military agency that released a document with confidential information incorrectly blacked out and led to leaking of sensitive information. This is similar to metadata, but isn't. Plain text files are the simplest kinds of document format and contain no hidden data whatsoever. These files have the ending, and it says .txt. I don't know what that is. Is that a typo? These files have the ending. Oh, okay. I guess they end with .txt, and they look like typewriter text. Various fonts, bold, italics, etc., are not possible with this format. Another sort of metadata on your computer is general operating system created metadata. This can include such things as timestamps, file creation data, last assessed, last modified, etc. It is probably not much of a stretch to call information stored by the OS in places such as the registry as metadata either. I wonder what OS means. Office support? Office systems? I know you technically savvy guys out there just laughing your ass off at my ignorance. Whatever. I know it's not an exciting show. I just want information to get out there. I don't think I can trust everyone's going to subscribe to the Paranoid Newsletter, so I might as well put this out there and let the chips fall where they may. So, okay, going on. Such information can include a great deal of things you likely would not expect. For example, Windows XP keeps a hidden log of every website you have ever visited with Internet Explorer since the installation of your computer. It also keeps various other data logs, including the names of programs you have launched and the dates you launched them. There are Windows XP tutorials. Is that like an editorial, but for computers or something? There are Windows XP tutorials that demonstrate how to disable to build in Windows XP metadata forensic tools. I'm reading this word for word, so if there's typos there, I hope you guys know that. Timestamps alone can be very damaging against you. In addition to helping to form timelines, they can be used to counter defenses in court. Microsoft goes out of its way to design its operating system in such a way as to leave forensic evidence everywhere. And that sentence ends with a big exclamation point. Switch to a different operating system like OS X Apple or one of the various Linux, LINUX-based operating system. OS X is the easiest for inexperienced computer users. Unfortunately, you will have to buy an Apple computer to use OS X. The Mac Mini is the least expensive machine offered by Apple and you can use your existing mouse, keyboard, monitor, and other accessories. And that ends my reading of technical stuff. I don't feel that I'm qualified to even do a show about this. I just want information to get out there. I just want people in the radio club who are technically savvy to go around society like a bunch of Michael Westons from Burn Notice. That's what I want. So, any of you guys that got the ability to, if you guys are launching any kind of campaign of propaganda, you want to use pictures, well, maybe you can find the information about taking your JPEG out of your camera, your hidden info. And when it comes to documents about metadata, that you're not tripped up by that. And how do you can load money on your debit cards? Not your money, of course. Go for it. Go forth and be prosperous. Be fruitful.
Some of this information is getting a little stale and old, so that's the way it goes. Just forget some of this stuff. Some of it's still good.
Pull and multiply. That's what I say. Well, now it's time for us to be going into War of the Fleet, forward-looking, enterprising area. That's exactly what we need to be. I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but it has to be done. Continuing on with General Grivas of the Greek insurgency on the island of Cyprus. Although Grivas says that at the onset, he would have been able, given 500 men, to drive the British into the sea, the remark is not to be taken seriously. From the start, he saw very clearly that his victory would be a political one rather than a military one. This is made clear in a general plan which he drew up in Athens 2 years before the first bomb exploded in Nicosia. Number one, the objective, to arouse international public opinion. Now, we don't want to arouse international public opinion. We want to arouse international imitation. We can get things started here in America. It may catch on to other parts of the white diaspora. So, objective number one, we want to arouse international public opinion, especially among the allies of Greece. For us, our white brothers and sisters living abroad, by deeds of heroism and self-sacrifice, which will focus attention on Cyprus. You know what? I'm going to reread this. But I'm going to change the words where it fits us. And you'll know where the words go. The objective number one, we want to arouse international imitation, especially among the white people living in Europe, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and even South Africa, by deeds of heroism and self-sacrifice, which will focus attention on the plight of the white race until our aims are achieved. That means self-determination for white people in every white land. Alright, the white people must be continuously, Zog must be continuously harried and beset until they are obliged by international diplomacy exercised through the United Nations, which we'll never get, to examine the plight of the white race and the problem they have of being bred out of existence, and settle it in accordance with the desires of the white people in the white diaspora in every white land. Number two, the procedure. Activity will be aimed at causing so much confusion and damage in the ranks of the forces of Zog as to make it manifest abroad, turning the page, that they are no longer in complete control of the situation. The campaign will be carried out on three fronts. Sabotage against government installations and military posts. Can't stress that enough. Number two, attacks on the forces of Zog by a considerable number of armed fighting groups. Well, we're a long way from that. And I don't foresee us having that in this lifetime. But we can set the stage for that with our international order of underground brotherhood of ghost wolves. We need to resurrect silent brotherhood. The Brüder des Schweigen. We need to resurrect it. Carry it on. Who of you out there will do this? Who of you out there right now listening to this show will make a pledge in your heart to carry on the work of Robert J. Matthews, David Lane, and the rest of the heroic men of the Order? Will any of you out there right now close your eyes and make that pledge to yourself, to your race? You may end up sacrificing some things. You may not get that promotion. You know, your family may complain that you're gone too long or gone too much. Search your own heart and see what you can do. We need to resurrect the silent brotherhood. And what is that silent brotherhood made of? Ghost wolves. Have they ever met each other? No. Have they ever emailed each other? No. Who of you out there will join me in this? Resurrecting the silent brotherhood. Number three, organization of passive resistance by the population. No, not in this lifetime. Who knows, though? If enough stuff happens, I mean, what can we do to get these Tea Party people radicalized? Well, it's certainly not going to be going to these demonstrations and, shouting into a microphone. Something needs to be done. We have a lot of potential people out there that we need to win, not really win over to our side, but we need to goad them along. And when we goad them along, they never know our true identity. Remember that. Because of the difficulties in the way of a large-scale guerrilla struggle, the main weight of the campaign will be placed on sabotage, and therefore the chief task of the fighting groups will be to support and cover the work of saboteurs by upsetting and diverting government forces. That's right. You bring the police and everyone else serving the Chinese occupation army to one part of the city while you wreak havoc in another part of the city. Absolutely. Success will not be achieved by minor or intermittent attacks, but only by a continuous campaign aimed at getting important results. It should not be supposed that by these means we should expect to impose a total material defeat on the British forces. Our purpose is to bring about a moral defeat by keeping up the offensive until the objectives stated in the first paragraph of this plan are realized. And that first paragraph of this plan was, and I'll reread it for our own specific time and place in history. The objective is to arouse international imitation by our white brothers and sisters living abroad, especially among the allies we have in Europe, Canada, the United States, New Zealand, Australia, by deeds of heroism and self-sacrifice, which will focus the attention on our disappearing race until our aims are met. And them aims are self-determination for white people in the United States and Canada. They say there's a good racially aware resistance in Western Canada, in British Columbia. Well, if you guys are listening to this, you better do something quick, because the Orient is taking over that part of your country. And if you let them get too big, don't fight fanatically. Let a couple generations go by when more and more of those chinks are born there and they feel a connection to that land. I'm telling you, the longer we wait, we're letting more and more generations of non-whites be born on this soil and they feel a connection to it. And we're going to have problems with them. We need to start creating a situation in this country that will force non-whites to flee this country. And believe it, and I'm going to tell you right now, that is going to make your life uncomfortable. You're not going to be able to watch Monday Night Football. We can create a situation in this country that shuts down the grid, shuts the water off, no flushable toilets, no beer in the refrigerator. Doesn't have to be that bleak, no, but we need to start temporarily becoming disciples of disorder or something. And if that's not your goal, fine. Start taking it to the system's ass in the way you know how. The Zog must be continuously harried and beset until they are obliged by international pressure from other white nations, exercised to a coalition and a federation of Aryan states, to examine the demise of the white race and settle it in accordance with the desires of white people and the entire white diaspora. As you know, I changed a lot of words there. Okay. Grievous was preparing a general attack timed to coincide with the meeting of the United Nations General Assembly in the fall. As an initial step, he proposed to put the native police force out of action as a reliable law enforcement agency so as to compel the British to extend their military forces, which are being used mainly to guard government buildings or held in their barracks for riot duty or similar emergencies. In an order dated June 28th, he informed EOKA group leaders, and this is what Grievous told them, the aim of our next offensive will be to terrorize the police and to paralyze the administration, both in the towns and the countryside. If this aim is achieved, the results will be threefold. Disillusionment will spread through the police force so rapidly that most of them, if they do not actually help us, will turn a blind eye to our activities. Active intervention of the army and security, which will stretch the troops and tire them out. The falling morale of the army will also influence its leaders. In the face of our strength and persistence and the trouble they cause, it is very probable that the United Nations, through member countries, who take an interest in Cyprus affairs will seek to bring about a resolution and a solution. The results we want will be obtained by 1. Murderous attacks against policemen who are out of sympathy with our aims and who try to hunt us down. Ambushes against police patrols in towns or raids on country police stations. And 3. Obstructing free movement of the police across the island by laying ambushes against individuals and groups. You know, I like his intensity, number one. Murderous attacks against policemen. Now, I'm not advocating us to attack policemen in this country. But, I don't want no one to get in trouble out there, but if somebody went on a spree of murderous attacks against enemies of the white race, I would shout for joy. Absolutely. So, I'm going to read most of this. I guess I got a lot of stuff outlined about General Grievous, and I hope you guys aren't bored by this. The guy did some things for his people. Gotta respect that. Alright. So, we must secure the existence of our people and the future for white children. Carpe Noctem. Seize the night. Starve the sheep inside you and feed the wolf. And make part of your mental makeup shield wall and wolf heart. Shield wall says that you will not allow yourself to be a victim of fear, and you will see yourself as a bold activist and guerrilla fighter for the survival of the white race. And Wolfheart, you will be ruthless. I'm not saying you can go out there and pour battery acid in a baby's face, but there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of human predators with dark skin out there. There's a lot of people selling out our race. There's a lot of Jews out there whose names are in the phone book. What exactly are you advocating there, Casper? I'm just saying I'd like to see some things happen, that's all. Is that bad? Does that make me evil? Of course it does, by your standards. By my standards, anything goes. Anything. And I'm not talking about stupid stuff, like, you know, dating someone out of my race or something like that. That's not what I'm talking about. When I say anything goes, I'm saying you don't have to abide by any moral code. If you want to imitate the Mongols and leave a head, like leave a pyramid of heads outside of a main street in a certain city, hey, I'm not advocating you do that, but if you did that, I would say you're a hero. That's how bad it's gotten. That's how bad it's gotten. A guy like me who can be a tolerant, sympathetic, empathetic man, Christian, Republican, Reaganite Republican, born-again believer, wanting to be friends with black people and brown people, going out of my way to be nice to people. If I can turn into what I've espoused on these shows, which is like practically satanic compared to what the kind of man I used to be, nothing happens in a vacuum. Once you get your wake-up call and you see that your race is being destroyed, well, then there's got to be action. If there's no action, you can tell yourself all you want to, knowing what we know, and if you have the ability to do some great things, you're a coward. If you don't do it, you're a coward. But with our thing, only you will know. Because we don't want you to connect and hook up and email anybody. It'd be great if people would leave organizations and become radical. So you can't have 14 words without Rehoboam. You can't have 14 words without racial holy war. And you can't have racial holy war without la ley de plomo, the law of lead. Law of lead. Maybe that needs to be our moral code. The law of lead.
Commenting on Sling Blade's show, which was excellent, when he talks about ridding North America of the non-whites and so forth. Well, in a collapse, most of these Untermenschen are not going to leave because anything is better than what they left to come here. So just having a financial collapse, they might thrive while our middle class is starving to death. So the road to that is to drop all this anti-other peoples in other countries, like the anti-communist thing trained us to do. You've got to let these people know some way. Now, we don't own the means of communication, television, radio, and so forth. All we've got is putting information into people's hands and over the internet, reaching out to these people in these other countries that are under the impression and occupation of the industrial complex in this country and Wall Street, which we are too, and it's getting worse all the time. It's getting worse fast. And let them know that we're not into the conservative right-wing thing. We're not siding with the system. The system is our bitter enemy. And we're with you on fighting the system. And what we would like to do is help you with your country so you don't have to flee your country and come over here to our country, and then it causes problems. It causes problems. Now, with all these non-white Islamics come in here, these Somalians and all this, it's just going to be big problems when things go to pot in this country. Now, if we could convince the thinking people of these other countries that we will ideologically ally with them to rid their countries of the oppressor or the occupation, and we will not support any form of intervention in other countries by the military-industrial complex and Wall Street to where they understand that we may be racist, we're racial separatists, but many of them are too. Even non-white people are tribalists too. But if enough of them understand that, then there'll be a time when people can re-immigrate or reverse-immigrate out, so we can stabilize our own culture and race in North America. I don't see any other way of doing it, because if they all perceive us as being a whole terrible enemy, and financial collapse comes, which, you know, eventually it will. These third world people are used to deprivation. They can survive in the alleys of the country and on the byroads and so forth. Some of them will turn to guerrilla warfare to get what they want. And against the system, that's okay as far as I'm concerned. But they got to understand that we're a different breed of cat, and we're in it for the long haul. And repatriation is the best way out. See, it's the capitalists, the industrial complex, Wall Street, that keeps causing the conditions where people want to immigrate out into other countries. There are thousands, millions of them moving all the time. Every time we cause a military occupation and there's all kinds of killing and bombing, people flee. They want to get out of the way. It's not necessarily they want to come and be your neighbor. I mean, why didn't they want to be your neighbor 20 years ago? Some of them did, maybe, but most of them didn't. They were very satisfied to live in their own tribal, cultural, racial areas, religious, and be their own people, until our capitalist system bombed the shit out of them, occupied them, murdered them by the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions. And then we try to say we're trying to nation, this government says it's trying to nation build. Nobody in the world believes that anymore, except the stupid Christian Zionists. The capitalists laugh about that out of the side of their mouth. They don't go into these countries to nation build or help them. At least the Chinese. Now, the Chinese are going out through Africa now, building, you know, bridges, railroads, all kinds of things. Well, they're not doing it out of the goodness of their heart, but they do know that by doing this, they're going to be more in a position to get the goodies out of the country, get the minerals and the oil and so forth out of the country, because these people are going to say, well, United States never did anything like that. They gave foreign aid, but only their dictators got it. And most of the money never got here. It was sent over here in arms for the dictator to keep control and suppress us and oppress us. So, of course, they're looking at the Chinese and saying, hey, they're pretty good guys. Well, they're doing it the right way. See, it was like the Germans didn't do it the right way in World War II, moving east. If they're going to move east, they should have befriended everybody they came across. Obviously, some of them were not going to be friendly. But most of the peasants in Russia, they would have gone along with them. But no, they got hard-ass and started executing them and all kinds of stuff. And so turned the population against them. You know, they had a million-man prisoner army there. All they had to do was ideologically talk to them and then take the ones that understood and give them weapons and say, come with us, we're going to Moscow. But no, military is not trained like that. That's their problem. They're trained to crush, destroy, and maybe give a little kid a couple of chocolate pieces once in a while, but then kick in the door and blow his parents away. So anyhow, you get my message. There's another way of doing this. It's the only way I can see to do it right now. Thank you, Slingblade. Excellent as always. 14-5, and I'll be back with you on Moon's Day.
Some people say this one, this song I wrote, is very naive. Well, I got to stand here and really not care, because I do actually hope that the masters of war die tomorrow. Masters of war, yeah, they build the big guns, yeah, they build the death planes, yeah, they build all the bombs, yeah, they hide behind walls, yeah, they hide behind this. I just want you to know I can read through your mask. Never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your own little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. Then you turn and run, father, when the fast bullets fly. Judas of old, you lie and deceive. Our war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes and I see through your brain, and I see through the water that runs down my drain. The word fear I can't ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world. So threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. That you die and your death will come soon. I'll follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I'll watch while you're lured down to your deathbed. I'll stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.